This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon out there, all you gardening crazies. I'll tell you what, it's a good day to garden, and everything you're going to plant's going to grow. I guarantee it, just because I said it. Anyway, thank you for listening. And
did you say laughing?
Laughing, yeah. I was going to say laughing. But this is a show about common sense gardening, landscaping, and those kinds of things. It's geared to be talked about in common sense kind of ways so everybody can understand it. Mm-hmm. I know all the technical terms. I know the Latin names. I know all that. But, you know, what good is that if you don't know what the heck I'm talking
right.
about, you know? So if you have a question about any project in your yard, 673-4464 would be the number you would call. And I will interrupt my speech that I have prepared and get right to your question.
Yeah, it's we'll a thick about, one.
Yeah, right.
About what, 10 pages?
No, only six.
Only six. Okay.
Only six pages of notes. I come fully prepared in case I have to go 3 hours.
There you go. And so. You can do the 5 o'clock news, too.
Yeah, I can do that. They wouldn't hire me, though, after what I said. Oh, God.
Oh, Lordy.
Oh, today I'm going to talk about rhododendrons because there's so many of them in Douglas County, you can't count them all, and they're all in bloom, it seems. So, but not many people know that there are about 1,000 basic species of rhododendrons.
Wow.
And of those 1,000 species, there's about 20,000 varieties that have been hybridized and changed the color a little bit, the growth a little bit, you know, that kind of thing. Because mm-hmm. those mad plant scientists out there say, hey, how can we make this apple tree bloom hot red blooms instead of, you know, pink and white? You know, and, you know, they do that stuff all the time. So they're trying to, quote, improve.
Right.
On the originals. But even 1,000 basic species, I mean, that's a lot. And they're all over the world.
Even China.
There are certain varieties of rhodies that will grow in the desert.
No.
They got them in South America. They got them at the Himalayas. They grow up near the Arctic Circle. That's how tough they are.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, do we have a call?
We do.
Well, good. I didn't have to get very far on that one, did I?
All right. Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi, and Mike, I've got to pick your brain a little bit. I understand blueberries are a part of the rhododendron family. I just heard that today. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know specifically, but they could be, you know, cousins.
Okay. Well, anyway, I heard that was a good thing to plant near your blueberries. My question is, as I ride around the community and I see blueberries planted, I see they have this ground cover cloth on that.
Uh-huh.
Is that a good thing to do? Right now I have peat moss on mine. The blueberries are established several years now, and I've been just using peat moss. What's the deal with that ground cover?
Well, it's supposedly to keep the weeds down and so they don't encroach upon your blueberry plant. I personally am not a fan of the ground cloth or plastic or any of that stuff. I'm a fan if you got weeds or anything coming up, go ahead and pull the things and keep it clean.
Right, right. And the peat moss seems to do that. Okay.
Yeah, peat moss, bark mulch is great, and it'll work. The ground cloth is expensive, and it's supposed to let the water penetrate through it, but oftentimes it gets plugged with you know, ground particles, if you will, and consequently it doesn't drain through as rapidly or as advertised, and so consequently you might have a water problem. You might have overwater or underwater, just depends on the situation and depends on the soil, but I'm not a fan of it.
Okay. All right, well, that kind of answered my question. They look good. They're doing well. I'm going to have to get the netting on them pretty soon. But I just thought, well, what's the deal with that ground cover? So,
yeah.
All right, well, thank you, and keep talking about plants. We're supposed to enjoy gardening. My husband says this should be joyful, and it usually is.
Well,
and
good.
It was a lovely, joyful day today. So, okay, thank
good.
You.
Thank you for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
I got a weed out in my front, the driveway there that grows right up through the rocks, gravel.
Yeah.
Well, I thought somebody would come by and get rid of it, one of the neighbors. But no, and now it's about this tall. You know, it's cool.
Can't you pull it?
No, it's stickery.
One of them dudes.
Yeah. So I got the bleach out today before I came here to work, and I just poured it all over it.
Well, if you got a spray bottle, it's more efficient, and then you can spray it up and down the stem. That's a good job. Clorox, bleach, any of that.
Yeah.
The plants don't like that stuff at all.
So it should be dead by the time I get home.
It could be, or just wilted really bad.
Good. It was going to be large. You know?
Oh, I know. and you don't want to let them go because they will multiply before your very eyes.
Absolutely.
Okay, I will get back to my rhododendrons here, and I was talking about how many there are, and people don't know how tough they are, and that they're grown all over the world. I was doing research and found out that there are rhododendrons that grow in desert areas. There's rhododendron varieties that grow right at the Arctic Circle, where it's stone cold most of the time, even in the summer. And yet they grow there. I don't recall the name. I didn't write the name down. But they're in the in the tropics. They're in Europe. They're in China, Asia,
Russia.
Oh yeah, definitely in Russia. And they just grow wild. I mean, that's how tough they are.
Wow.
And so when folks come in and are looking at rhodies in the nursery, and they're looking at. And they say, well, I don't know. It's will that take this kind of ground, or will that take this kind of situation? And 99% of the time, wherever they're planting it, it'll work.
It'll work.
and really, the only thing, and I say this 1,000 times, I think, the only thing that'll really hurt it is if you water it way too much and drown it. That's simple as that. But as in my doing my research, I found a variety that actually grows in a swampland. So, and I didn't get the name of that, and I was going, I was reading pretty quickly and trying to cover a lot of ground just to kind of get a feel for this, and I thought, man, in a swamp, in a desert, I mean, how far wide-ranging did these things actually do?
Well, that swamp didn't get drained.
No, it didn't. we think about rhodies only growing in Oregon and Washington, Pacific Northwest.
Right,
Like I said, I just mentioned that, there are varieties that grow close to the Arctic Circle. Jeez. And in the southeastern part of the United States, like Florida, rhododendrons in Florida. And the majority of rhodies that we have here in the Pacific Northwest came from Asia, as past sailors and merchant people that were in different countries. They would see something and dig it up and bring it back to America. And somebody back in the 1820s or whatever, and they give it to their local plant guy who's one of those plant fanatics.
See what I found?
Yeah, see what I found? And that plant fanatic would plant it, and it would grow, and then he'd maybe clone it or, make more cuttings, and pretty soon you got a whole brand new variety of plants running around the United States.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Plants don't need anything but a little bit of food and water and sun. And that pretty much, covers it. But like I say, the majority of the rhodies that we have here in Pacific Northwest came from Asia.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's good. And we treat our rhodies and our landscapes very well. Very well here, with good soil, fertilizer, water. Occasionally somebody tries to plant them in black mud. And they don't like black mud because it gets hard and cracks and all that stuff. But it's interesting, up near Diamond Lake, like from Tokidi, there's, about Tokidi, where the elevation really starts to get steep and you climb lots of feet in a short time. You find these rhododendrons growing very well in old lava flows, the ones that come, you see the lava flow coming down and next to the road, and there's a rhododendron growing in it, for crying out loud. And you go, how in the world could that rhododendron grow in rock? Well, long time ago, it rooted into, say, soil, and then the whatever exploded, Mount whatever, and maybe Bailey, I'm not sure. And there was lava flows, and consequently, the roadie survived.
Mount Bailey explodes every day.
I know. And But you see that, you know, and the only water that they get comes from snowmelt. And if you have 10 feet of snow sitting on a 6-foot rhododendron, it's mm-hmm. a cold, long winter. And yet when that snow melts, that rhododendron is still alive. It still blooms in, you know, about May, June. That's about when they bloom up there, the wild ones, the June, mm-hmm. about June. And if you drive up the North Umpqua, probably a few miles past Steamboat, you know, kind of keep your eyes peeled on both sides of the road, and you'll see a real, you know, all of a sudden you'll see something pink in bloom. It's a rhododendron.
and
mixed amongst the dogwoods that everybody thinks is fragile. Dogwoods ain't fragile.
Apparently not.
No, they're not. we kill them with kindness. And I've tried to explain that to, you know, thousands of people over the years.
Yeah.
And some of them might even believe me. I don't know. But, I mean, I got them on my place, and I've got literally hundreds of dogwoods growing on slopes that are, you know, rocky soil.
No water.
And they're in full bloom, and they're beautiful.
Wow.
You know, and some of them are almost in full sun. Some of them are in the shade. And the ones in the full sun actually got more blooms on them.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. And there's a couple I when I run my dog up the mountain at night, the sun is setting behind the mm-hmm. big ridge, and the sun is shining on about three in a group about halfway up the mountain. And, I mean, they're probably a good 30, 35 feet tall.
Jeez.
And they grow slow, so they're really old. You know, and they're sitting up there, and they're in full bloom. They're absolutely gorgeous, you know.
Nice.
So I don't know. But anyway, that's dogwoods. I was talking about roadies, but the same thing with roadies.
Are they in the same category?
Seem
as tough.
They're in the tough category. That's,
yeah, that's
what I would say. You know, so when we plant them here in our yards, you know, we plant them in relatively good soil. We take care of them. We water them. We fertilize them. And I don't see how in the heck anybody can kill a rhododendron. I really don't. Usually the only thing that really damages rhododendrons are root borers. They get into the root system. And they start eating the roots off, and then consequently the plant cannot get any nutrition from the soil, and that's when it starts to die. But there are chemicals that will kill those root weevils, and you know, like a fertilizer type, and you spread it around the plant, and it gets down in the soil and mm-hmm. kills the root weevils.
It just dawned on me why Mom always had roadies.
Why?
Because Dad didn't like anything she planted, and he tried to kill her. But,
uh-huh.
So she
but he couldn't kill the roadies?
Roadies or the rose bushes.
Nobody can kill a rose.
Hey, we got another call coming
in. All right.
Want to take it before the break?
Yes, we'll take it before the break.
Hey, good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. So you helped me out last week with my daughter and her holes.
Uh-huh.
So I've got another question for you. I've got a cat problem.
A cat problem?
We're talking cats, and we're talking like last night I went out there, and there were like five cats next to my car.
Oh, no.
I don't mind cats. You know, cats are cute. Cats are furry. But I don't want cats in my yard. So what can I do to get rid of the cats in my yard?
You ever heard
of it? I don't want to cause them no longer to live because cats are you know, creatures, and we all need to be nice, and you know, and there's PETA and those kind of people, and we don't want to be mean to cats. But I don't want them in my yard anymore.
So pit bulls are out, huh?
I don't want dogs. Remember last week?
Yeah.
No dogs because of the hole.
I know.
So what do we do? How do I tell the cats they're no longer welcome?
Well, are they there all the time, or
do you feed them?
You don't feed them, I hope.
I don't feed them. No.
Good.
If I had my druthers, I wouldn't let them be fed by anyone. But I'm sure my neighbors love their cats, and I'm sure there's cat food out to be. I don't feed them. I don't give them water. I don't do anything for them.
Uh huh. So I think if you went to the co-op, you could find a cat and dog repellent type of material there, whether it be granular or even spray, and you might try that. And if they're hanging out in a specific area, that's the area you'd want to treat. and just to see what would happen. There's to chase them off all the time is one way, yeah, but you're going to wear yourself out, and they're still going to come back. Loud noises.
How about wind chimes? Would wind chimes work?
I don't think so. They would probably love them and sit under them and listen to them. My cat does. But you might try like a BB gun without BBs, you know, for the loud pop, you know, to scare.
No, I'm not going to do that. My daughter would be frightened if I did that.
Oh.
Remember, she's only 7.
Oh, well.
So is there plants I can plant?
No, I don't think so. I don't. You don't have any catnip in your yard, I hope.
No.
Good. But no, I don't know of any plant that will keep a cat away. Maybe cactus with spines, but you know, that would be that'd be over the top kind of solution. I would look for a spray or a some kind of a dry cat repellent type material. That's the best guess, and I am guessing.
How about dung from the safari? Do they have?
Well, yeah. Good idea. Good idea.
Would the dung from the safari?
Yes. Yes.
Repel it?
Yes. I've heard that. I've heard that it was successful too. I never even thought of that. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. And they'll give it to you. I mean, there's no charge, man. And, you know, get a couple bucketfuls and kind of spread it around the perimeter or whatever. And, you know, if they smell a lion or a bear or something like that, you know, it seems to me that they would turn around and go the other way.
Now, I'm a fan of giraffes, so I'm not going to get giraffe dung because, well, actually, I am a fan. Maybe they'll come and visit my yard if I put enough dung in the yard. I'll get some giraffes.
Could be. I don't know. But try that out.
Yeah.
Give them a call. They probably have a better solution to this than I do.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe you might have the all-wise answer, but...
Nah, frankly, on this one, I'm totally out of brain power.
All righty. Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you, sirs.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All righty. Let's take a break. We'll be back with who knows what. Here on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All righty, obviously, we are back once again.
Yeah, and this is the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, in case you haven't tuned in and known that. But the gentleman that just called about how to remove cats, if there's anybody who's got an idea or a solution, don't hesitate to call us and tell us what it is. It's got to be a surefire way. It can't be no Cracker Jack kind of thing, you know. It's got to be something that actually works, and you can't shoot them.
Or poison them
or anything like that, but some kind of a natural barrier that they won't penetrate because it smells bad, tastes bad, or scares them, whatever.
Yeah.
So if you got that solution, give us a call, 673-4464. So I'm talking about roadies and telling you about where they come from and how they're spread all over the world and how we think we're so unique because we have rhododendrons here in the Pacific Northwest when we're latecomers to the game, you know. But the Himalayan region of China and northern India form a large natural growing area for roadies. I mean, they just like weeds there. And many species are found in like Burma, Japan, Okinawa, and many Asian islands. So they're not just, you know, the Pacific Northwest plant. They are everywhere. And in those places, it gets pretty warm. They have sufficient rain most of the time, but it rains all the time in many of those places that I just mentioned. But you know, the soil is different from ours, and I'm sure the plants are slightly different, but they are rhododendrons, so it's amazing. So over many years, early the sailors and the explorers and all these kind of cats that floated all over the world encountered these wild roadies and, you know, brought samples back to the USA. And then the early plant folks out there that were doing hybridizing and things like that and playing around with plants, began to hybridize these roadies with ours that we have in the USA and created many of the varieties that we have today. I was reading about the history of certain varieties, and it was amazing how, you know, where they came from and what the origin of the original plants were. And, you know, we think we're so unique because we have all these wonderful rhododendrons here in Oregon and Washington, the Pacific Northwest. But, you know, they're, like I say, from all over the world. So when planting roadies in your yard, there are a few basic procedures for success. And even though I told you they grow at the Arctic Circle in the deserts and all over China and Burma and Okinawa, we got different soil here. We got different climate here. Uh-huh. So what we want to do is give them the best shot at life and living and health that we possibly can. And over the years, I've grown roadies and I've planted them at my house. I've grown them in my field for commercial use and sale. And the basic things that I learned were give them a little bit of water, give them a little bit of food, and let them go.
Leave them alone.
Leave them alone. Quit messing with them. But a good soil mix that drains well, it's important. Because you don't want them in swamping conditions, not our Pacific Northwest types. There are some that grow in swamps, like I said. I don't know which variety that is. They didn't name it, or they named it, and it was too hard for me to pronounce, so I didn't write it down. Yeah. But here in the Pacific Northwest, they want some good organic-type material that they root in, and that's their best place to live. They like that. Now, why they like the lava beds of the North Umpqua, I have no clue.
That is odd.
You know, they're just so tough. But, you know, draining well is super important. In pure clay, you know, which Douglas County is predominantly known for, it's hard as a rock in the summer and sloppy as all get out in the winter, and you know, makes you taller when you walk through it. So they don't like that either. So an amending process has to take place. So when you do well when you amend your soil with old mulch, old bark mulch, even old sawdust, and any kind of a compost material or peat moss, potting soil. It doesn't really matter. And and then you find out how well they will grow. And once they're established in your primary planting hole that you've dug out for them, and even in a clay type situation, if you dig a big enough hole, deep enough and wide enough, and fill it with good material, the roadie's going to grow. And then as it grows and the root system develops, even the clay can't stop it, because by that time it's sufficiently strong, established, and the roots are ambitious, and they just continue
to
spread.
It's not a baby anymore.
You're right. Right. It's not, you know, a fresh transplant. And that, this sign, you know, if you do it good enough, this will take place within 18 months to 24 months where it can get into the original soil, even though it's bad. Mm-hmm. It won't penetrate it quickly, but at least it has a base around the main root structure in which it can grow and be healthy. So here's how tough they are. I just wanted to tell you a few stories here. One day a client called and needed me to look at her giant rhododendron that had lost a large main limb due to an oak tree crashing into it. She lived up there at the bottom of the Callahans, and you know, a lot of big oaks and stuff like that.
Sure.
And they had firs and things like that, and this, she just said, okay, am I going to lose this thing? I you know, she was kind of upset about it.
Yeah.
And so I looked at the crashed roadie, and and sure enough, I saw this big old limb that was probably 12 feet long laying on the ground where the main tree branch hit it. And the limb that was laying on the ground was as big as a small tree with a 6-inch diameter.
Wow.
In other words, picture a rhododendron branch with a 6-inch trunk laying flat on the ground. But when you trace back to the end of the branch, you see that it's still connected by a sliver of bark to the main plant.
Oh.
I mean, there's a big gapping wound,
right?
And you see the meat of the heart of the plant. Mm-hmm. But and then I looked down and I said, well, it's still attached. And solutions were, well, pick the branch up and rope it together so it can heal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so big It was, I thought, well, I don't know. but anyway, this thing, this branch was as big as a small tree. And so I noticed upon, you know, close inspection, there was about 30 small little tiny branches or buds popping up along this, this limb that was laying down on the ground. And it still had life and it was pushing new growth. And I said, well, you got a real, and it was kind of interesting because all these little buds were like in a straight line, like a little hedge. And, but they were only a couple, 3 inches apart, but they were, oh gosh, maybe 30, 40 of them laying on the branch or coming up on the branch.
Yeah.
And they were coming straight up because the branch is laying down and gravity being what it is, they're going straight up. And I laughed. I said, and I pointed this out to the client. And she says, well, I said, you know, you, what you can do is trim the end of it. Oh, and by the end of it, where the leaves were, it was in bloom. It hadn't stopped blooming. So, you know, they're amazing plants.
Yeah.
That's how tough they are. So I said, well, you could cut some of the end branches off after they're bloomed, and then just put some soil or some bark mulch up around here, and you've got a whole row of brand new rhodendrons, you know, like a hedge.
You don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything. So she thought that was a pretty good idea, and I hope she followed through. I don't know. She's never called me back, so I don't know.
It must have worked.
It must have worked. I was hoping it would work. That's what I would have done. See, when I give recommendations, you know, I look at the overall situation and scientifically deduce, well, will this work or will that work? Or but the bottom line comes down, if this was in my yard, what would I do with it? And that's the advice I give folks, because of all the experiments I've done with plants over the years, I found out that by experimenting and seeing what can happen without fiddling them, fiddling with them all the time and trying to make them do things they don't want to do, they grow back okay. They come back and they're, you know, my professor said that plants don't grow because of us, they grow in spite of us. And he was my botany professor and my silviculture professor.
You learned a lot.
Learned a lot. And I didn't believe him at first, but I found out he was right. Now, another client, and this story I probably told before too, called me up and she says, I've got these huge rhodies in front of my windows and I don't like them. They don't have any leaves on them. They're ugly and I want them out.
Ugly?
Yeah, ugly. Because they were just, the leaves were 10 feet in the air and these were just stems in front of her windows.
Okay.
And these were glass, a whole wall of glass windows with a view.
Okay.
And they were, the bare sticks were sticking right
sticking
there, you know? So, and they were like 10, 12 feet tall. So I go out there, check it out. And she says, get them out of here. I don't want them. Throw them away. Get rid of them. And I looked at it and I thought, well, let me try an experiment here. So, and she wanted them all taken out and new plants put in. All right. Well, this had happened to be in July. The temperature was at least 95 degrees. And, you know, you ever try to transplant anything or even a rhododendron in 95 degrees in the middle of July? And, and I thought, well, give it a shot. So thankfully, I had my crew with me, and I just couldn't throw them away. I mean, I just couldn't. So we cut them down to about 3 feet tall, and then we dug them very carefully. And I, like I say, I pruned those 2-inch diameter branches to about 2 to 3 feet tall, somewhere in there. And the root balls were so large that we could only get three in the pickup truck. And it took three guys to pick one root ball up because I didn't bring any equipment with me because they said, you have rhododendrons. You don't need equipment to move a rhododendron, right? Well, it would help. Wrong on that one, Buck. So anyway, I made three trips to the nursery carrying three of these giant rhodies back to the nursery. And what I did, I wanted to save them. I wanted to try and save them. Yeah. And I got a shady place out back where, with irrigation, and that's where the hospital is, the plant hospital and the young nursery where things are small, not ready for retail, and that's where we store them and grow them and all that kind of stuff and let them recover. Mm-hmm. So at any rate, no leaves, two or three, four feet tall. I put about 6 inches of mulch on the ground because I wasn't going to dig a hole and I didn't have any pots large enough to pot them up.
Yeah.
So I put 6 inches of mulch on the ground. I put the root balls on top of the mulch and then I covered the roots with mulch. Uh-huh. And it took about three scoops of my tractor to do that because they were so stinking big.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but they were in the shade, afternoon shade. There were sprinkler systems out there. And after about 2 months, nothing happened for 2 months. And after about 2 months, these little tiny buds started to appear on the stems, little green bumps. Hmm. And I thought, there is life here. And by the next spring, say April-ish, May maybe, all nine of them were fully leafed out. And I thought, well, they're going to live. So I bought these huge pots, huge expensive pots, and we potted them all. And it took three guys to lift them and put them in pots. I mean, that's how heavy they were. A year later, yeah. I kept them out back. And a year later, the flower buds appeared and they weren't blooming. So we moved them up front into the retail area. And when they flowered, they were magnificent. There was purple and red blooms, and there were so many blooms on them, you couldn't hardly see the leaves.
Oh, wow.
And really, they were amazing. So I put a price on them of $250 a piece, sold every one of them.
Oh,
every
nice.
One of them. So cool. Rough roadies are tough, and there are many, many, many to choose from. We got a break?
Yep.
I thought so.
We sure do.
Okay. We'll be back.
Couple of minutes right here. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
COVID free.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello there, my friend. We are back.
Yes, and I've been talking about rhododendrons, and some people have been talking about cats and how to get rid of them. And I knew my suggestions wouldn't work because he wasn't going to have that.
Shotgun?
Not a shotgun. You can live trap them. You know, there's live trap, right, put some bait in there, and then they go in there, and it's like a little cage, and then you take them to the shelter up here and say, I got some free cats for you.
Mm-hmm. They love you for that.
I know, and they find a way to...
Find a permanent home.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what they call it?
Well, a new home.
New home.
Yeah. But, you know, the fable that roadies are this dainty little thing that needs a lot of care not true. It's not true. They're tough. Don't be afraid to plant them. Don't be afraid to neglect them. I've got some at home I don't think I water once a month in the summer, maybe twice a month in a hot, 100 degrees. And they do fine. They bloom. They're just, and I got them like on a 2 foot tall mound by about 4 feet in diameter, so they're way up. They can't get flooded. No way, Jose. They're never going to get flooded. So I know that the drainage is good, and they're growing, like I say, in old bark, no soil, no soil at all, and they're doing just great. And they've been in 7, 8 years, 10 years. I lost count. But when it's real hot, 90 degrees plus, I keep an eye on them. And if they look droopy, the leaves are actually, instead of kind of going straight out flat, they're kind of just droopy. You know, they look droopy. They look like, wow, man, it's too hot. Give me a drink. So that's when I soak them. And that might be July, August, maybe twice a month. And I just drag my old hose out there and just hold it right at the base and then spray. And when the sun is behind the ridge, I go ahead and spray the leaves to kind of freshen them up. And the next day, it's just, looks like a brand new rhododendron. And if it continues to stay hot, in about 10 days or so, it starts to get that look again. And I stress it a little bit and go out to about 12, 14 days. And then I give it the same watering treatment. They've been, like I say, in there 10 years maybe. And that's how tough they are. And just think of the ones up the North Umpqua that are out there in full sun and no water, no food. And they don't die. And I've seen them 15, 20 feet tall. You get off the main road, you get on one of them logging roads and kind of cruise up there real slow. You'd be amazed at how many rhododendrons are up there and how large they are. I mean, they're trees. And in fact, I was reading somewhere that some of the largest rhododendrons in the world are up to 80 feet tall. And again, I don't remember the name and I don't remember where they came from because I was reading a lot of material just to get a feel for what they are worldwide. And was there something I didn't know? And I didn't know they were 80 feet tall, that's for sure. But I'll do some more research on that and come back with some information. But just remember, they can survive dry soil better than wet soil, the ones we have here. And like I say, if the leaves are hanging down, good, and they're limp and droopy, go ahead, water heavily. Otherwise, let them be, let them go, let them get tough. And I think the best use of rhododendrons in your landscape is that not only that they are tough, but they live a long time, and they come in all sizes, shapes, and colors. So you can have a real super display of rhododendrons. You could have just rhododendrons in your backyard, say, front yard, whatever. But let's say you got a big backyard and you don't like a lot of lawn, so you got a little bit of lawn and this great big planting bed, and you put rhodies in there. Well, we've got rhodies that are, Impeditum, for instance, is a real tiny rhodie. Little small flowers like, big as your fingernail, maybe. And they only grow about a foot tall. And they bloom very early in the season. They're kind of like a blue violet. Then there are other ones that bloom December and January and February. So you can have color from early on through most of the summer. And there's just only a short period of, say, August through November that you won't have flowers on them, but you're doing other things at that time. You're going to football games, should they ever have them again.
It's true.
You know, you can have other things in there for color if you desire, but you could have at least 6 or 7 months of color simply with rhododendrons and a mixture of rhododendrons. You can have the large ones in the background with the small ones in between, kind of triangulating on the big ones, and just make a rhododendron park. That's all. Just nothing but rhododendrons.
With very little care, apparently. With,
exactly. Yeah. A lot of mulch, and then when you refer to size, you know, there are dwarfs, like I said, only grow 1 or 2 feet in their lifetime. That's it.
Wow.
And then, like I said, on the other end of the spectrum, some grow as tall as grow into trees as tall as 80 feet. Now, I've seen them 20 feet up right here in our own backyard. There's a couple over in the
Laurelwood
neighborhood. It's like really old neighborhood with older homes and old landscaping. I swear there's one over there that's at least 20 feet tall. It's absolutely outrageous when it's blooming. Nice. It's probably blooming now. So if you cruise through Laurelwood, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a regular one. So
yeah, a normal.
Yeah,
so
a normal one. Yeah. Now, the dwarf rhododendrons that I was talking about, they can make a nice bonsai plant, too. You can keep them in a bonsai pot and keep them on your deck or your, you know, concrete patio or whatever. And they're very decorative, and they do well. They don't need a whole lot of care. I've got one or two in my bonsai collection at my place. And they bloom. They look good, and then they stay green, and they don't beg for a lot of care. They're okay. Blue diamond is one that's would make a good bonsai plant because it's a dwarf and it stays small flowers, and the Impeditum is the other one, and they're very dwarf. So rhodies can be a nice bonsai in a pot, planted among the larger rhodies or other plants in your yard, or in a small foundation planting. You know, oftentimes there's a there's a side of the house, and then there's a bed maybe 3 feet wide, planting bed, then a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so what do I put in this bed? Well, put dwarf rhododendrons. That they'll work there. It wouldn't crowd them. It's not going to hurt the house. It's not going to hurt the plant. It's not going to hurt the sidewalk. Yet you're going to have an evergreen in there that's tough, doesn't require a whole lot of care, and it's going to bloom.
And it's going to fill the space.
Yeah, and it's going to fill the space. And if you think it doesn't fill it enough, then you could plant some annuals in between in the spring and really do that. And they're not going to outgrow. They're not going to be a hassle for you in the long run. They're going to be simple. And that's what you need to think about. Unless you're a gardening fanatic that loves to work in the garden all the time, you want to think about how can I have a beautiful yard yet simplify it at the same time, so I don't have to work it, you know, 3 days a week or 4 days a week, or, you know, I don't mind getting out there and putting around. Oh, maybe one afternoon a week or something like that, and keeps it nice and great. But I don't want to.
I don't want to be a
full-time slave. I'll call Wintergreen to do that.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh gosh, yeah. And I'm up to my eyeballs in work, I'll tell you. And you can't hire nobody because everybody's
still.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen all the help on it signed all over? We've even got some ads running. Yeah, it's true. I know. It's crazy. and you know, people that I've scheduled jobs for, they're waiting and saying, I'm going as fast as I can.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can't go any faster.
Never seen anything like it.
Right. Now.
Should we take a break?
Okay. If you insist, you're the guy who owns the show.
Okay. We'll be right back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right. Saw a call coming in just a couple of seconds ago. Call back.
It's okay. Call back. We had to take a break and couldn't talk to you.
And we still have time.
Yeah, we got 6 minutes, 7 minutes, something like that. So, one thing I see in this town is overgrown roadies. You know, everybody's afraid to prune them because you're going to damage them and kill them. No way, Jose. No. You're not going to kill them. They're going to go, wow, thank you for taking all that extra weight off us. I needed that.
I can breathe.
I can breathe again. Don't hesitate to prune and shape. It's okay. And the right time to prune an overgrown roadie is after they bloom. You know, let them bloom out, and then you can whack them back. I told you the story about how I took 10-footers to 2-footers, and... It only took those, and that was drastic, and it only took them 2 years to come back in full bloom. So you can cut them to any size, any shape. If you want a rhododendron tree, prune it into a tree form. If you want a rounded little shrub, do it. And when to prune? After they bloom and before the leaves appear. That would be good, the new leaves. There's always leaves on them. They're evergreens. But before the new buds come out. As soon as they bloom, they got their old flower stem there. Just pop that off if you want to, but just go ahead and prune them. Prune them, shape them, thin them, get rid of the ancillary branches that are crisscrossed in the middle of them, the little skinny ones that are kind of twisted and ugly and don't really do nothing, just get in the way and suck up nutrients. Get rid of those. Leave the main stems, and you'll see how much more beautiful that plant will be for you as soon as it leaves back out. So if you prune in the winter, you're pruning next season's flowers off because the buds are on there. The buds form in about August, July, August, September, right in there. And you'll see them. They're round and fat, and they're not leaves. They're buds. They're flower buds. So if you prune in, you think, well, December is the time to prune, and you go ahead and prune them back, you're losing all your flowers for the following spring. And the same advice holds true for azaleas and camellias. The bloom buds, they're the large ones at the end of the branch for the most part, and leaf buds are small and slender. There's a real difference in the two. You can see them when you look at them very closely. It's easy to tell the difference. And the average size roadie should not be planted next to a house, right up next to a house, right up next to a fence, or, you know, within 2 feet of the driveway or a sidewalk or something like that. Give them space to grow in all directions. They're going to get big one of these days, and rather than chop it to pieces because it got too big because it's next to the house, you know, why, don't do that. And if you plant them under trees, build a mound so that the tree roots are not in competition with the rhododendron roots. You're not going to hurt the tree by building a mound that's like 2 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and you plant the rhododendron in there. And then the rhododendron, which is a surface rooter, the roots will stay fairly close to the surface, and the tree roots are going to stay where they were anyway. But if you plant it in the native ground and try to chop out the tree roots, you can, but you're going to do a little bit of damage to the tree, possibly. But you plant this rhododendron in amongst all these tree roots, and there's going to be wide competition, and I think the roadie's going to lose in the long run. The trees are already established. They're given shade. A part shade situation is beautiful. You get a little bit of sun, a little bit of shade, a little bit of cool when it's hot, and they thrive in that. You just want to make sure that the root systems are not in competition. So build a mound. Get them up. And like I said, a good mound size would be about 4 feet wide, 2 feet high. Mine are a little bit bigger at my place because I've got them planted by some Deodar cedars and some Leyland cypress. But they're not right next door, but they're out of the root range. How's that? Well, Also, when you have a lot of roadies in your yard, you know, spread them out. Spread them out a bit. You know, at least 8 to 10 feet apart. You know, you can have a rhododendron garden, but give them space to grow. They'll grow, and they will fill that space between those plants. And it may take some time, but in the long run, they're going to do well. They're going to look good. And you're going to be able to actually walk between them. So let's say you have a space, garden space in the back. It's 100 feet long and maybe 15 feet wide. How many roadies would fit in nicely? I'd say no more than maybe 7 large growing types, or maybe 14 or 15 dwarf or very small ones. I mean, again, that's a lot of space. That's what they need. That's what they'll do well with. When placing any plants in your yard, always put them, you know, don't take them out of a container. Place them around, you know, look at, you know, just say, well, I'd like that there, and put the pot down there. And, you know, well, I'll like this one here. And you just, all the plants are still in their pots. You haven't planted any. And then step back and look at them, you know, for a while. You know, see how it fits. See, yeah, you can tell, are they too close? Yeah, maybe they're too close. I need to spread them. Or is you know, maybe they're too far apart. I could fit a few more in go from there. And think about this. If you got some against the house, is it going to grow too large or block a window? And if so, space them out. Do some rearranging. Go inside and look out the window to see what they look like when you're sitting in your house looking out at them.
Yeah.
Are they going to obstruct your view? And if they do, move them. Move them so they don't. Move them so you can enjoy them, but they're not going to mess with your house. They're not going to mess with your view or anything like that. And like I said, while the plants are still in their pots, they're easy to move. Once they're in the ground, there's a whole new ball game. You don't want to do that.
You betcha.
Or you could draw a quick sketch on, you know, just a legal notebook page. You know. And we'll start again next week, I guess, huh? All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something.
We have run out of time. You're still looking for help.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Always. I've waited a year at one of these employment agencies.
Yeah.
And they sent me 2 people, neither of which worked out.
For
whatever reasons. But, I don't know.
We'll try it again.
Work ethic is gone, I think. Yeah.